This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
And as part of our podcast series, you're listening to Roseanne Murray, and I have with me in the studio today Helen Hughes, who's the chief executive of the Sanctuary Mountain Maungatauturi. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much. It's so lovely to meet you, and thanks for having me.
Hey, that's great. Look, really excited to hear all about what you do, what's up there at the mountain for our people to experience. And I know we had Rebecca reach out to us a while ago and said, hey, how about coming out and having a look and experiencing what we have here? So, yeah, really keen for our listeners to hear all about it and whether you've got anything that's coming up you'd also like to share with us. So it's all yours, Helen.
Okay. So Sanctuary Mountain Maungatauturi, first of all, I probably should explain what that is for a lot of people that aren't aware of us. So if you're heading south from Hamilton and you're heading towards Cambridge, on the expressway you'll see a mountain, a maunga there, and that is where we're located. So just behind Te Karapiro, about a half an hour from Cambridge, an hour from Hamilton. The sanctuary was formed almost 25 years ago by the community. There was an opportunity for us to put a predator or pest-proof fence up, and there'd been one sanctuary created down in Wellington called Zealandia, and they were the first of the predator-free sanctuaries that were created across the country. Today, there are 14 sanctuaries in total. Seven of them are coastal and seven of them are ring-fenced like us. Zealandia has about 8 kilometres of predator fencing. It's around 200 odd hectares. And by way of comparison, Sanctuary Mountain Maungatauturi is 3,363 hectares of old growth native. And we've got 47 kilometres of predator proof fencing up. So it's a heck of a project. It's huge. And we believe we're the largest of our kind in the world. If you were to come on Maungatauturi 25 years ago, you would have been standing in the forest and look through the canopy and be able to see kind of 300, 400 metres into the distance, heavily browsed by goats and pigs and deers. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the whole shebang, possums, stoats, the lot. The idea of the sanctuary was to build these walls, and the walls basically do everything they need to do to try and keep predators out. It took 2 years to install 47 kilometres of fencing, and it took another 2 years to get ourselves to a point that we were considered predator-free. So by the time we did that, we were then in a position to start to look to translocate species in, and our first translocated species was kiwi. And what most people don't know about Maungatauturi is that we've gone from zero kiwi on the maunga 25 years ago to a population in excess, if we weren't translocating out now, it would have been around 4,000 kiwi that we have.
That is an amazing number.
It's an amazing number. So over the last 4 years, we've been actively translocating the manu out and to other conservation projects around the North Island. So Capital Kiwi, Tongariro, we've got birds going to Taranaki, and we're working with local conservation groups and iwi to make all of this magic happen. That's meant over the last 4 years we've translocated 800 birds off Maungatauturi, the largest translocation of birds in the world. You know, we started with the largest translocation of kiwi because we know they're only here and that's easy.
Yep.
But we've done a little bit of Googling and we believe it's the largest translocation of any birds in the world, which is pretty phenomenal.
Sure is.
Pretty phenomenal. So that's the sanctuary, and our intent is to make the maunga sing. If you were again to come 25 years ago, there was no dawn chorus. There was no bird life there. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen is by being able to eradicate predation within this area, we're able to see a flourishing species revival. So there's 730 native flora and fauna species on Maungatauturi. Some of them are only endemic to Maungatauturi. Taitiri, but we've been able to translocate in things like Hihi, Tieki, Kōkākau, Mahanui Giant Weta last year. I'm not a big fan of Weta, I have to be honest. I'm like, oh, the big scary insects.
Yeah.
And then the biggest thing that we've done the last almost 3 years is we are the only mainland site that's able to have a resident population of kākāpō.
Oh.
So there are 3 kākāpō on Maunga Tautiri now, and we hope that we'll be able to grow that population, particularly the breeding offshore this year. There's been over 100 new little babies born.
Yeah.
So hopefully at some point we'll be in a position we'll get more kākāpō in, and then be in a position that maybe we might be able to get a female and have a breeding program. So that's the long goal.
Mm-hmm.
Amongst all of that, I'm a big believer in conservation being amazing, but it does come for a lot of people with, well, okay, but so what? And for me, the thing I'm really focused on since joining the team is how do we connect with the community better? How do we improve well-being for areas of vulnerability within the community? And we've got a really thriving education program. About 6,000 students come through that annually. And we've got a tourism business as well that we run as a way of trying to help fund the sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Scale is big. So is cost. So it costs us around $5,500 a day to keep the sanctuary running. We are funded to about half of that, and I have to find $1 million worth of funding every year, and that cost is increasing.
Okay, not a small amount, is it?
Not a small amount. No. And, you know, in this environment, being a charity, which we are, so we're a not-for-profit. The not-for-profit sector in New Zealand right now is struggling.
Mm.
You know, as recessions hit, as fuel prices go up, that available cash that people have to donate goes. The way the government agencies are working at the moment, there isn't anything out there easy. And the need is growing. And why? Because we've got things like the Predator Free 2050 program that wasn't there 10 years ago. And so we've got a whole heap of community-based projects that have set up charitable trusts to do conservation work, which is amazing. It means, though, that the competition for money is intense, really intense. So we're having to diversify a lot and think around how we can bring in different revenue streams. We're doing a lot on the tourism side. So what you may not be aware of, most people know the Tongariro crossing as a thing to do, a day trip. Well, we do a Maunga Tautiri crossing. So we have a shuttle service that we've just started running at the end of last year that is running at the moment on the weekends. And you come and park on the southern side of Maunga Tautiri, that's where the visitor centre is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will drive you around to the northern side, and then it's an 11-kilometre hike over the top of the mountain and back down to the visitor centre, where there is barista coffee waiting for you at the end.
Sounds fantastic. And so the level of fitness you'd need to do that?
You need to have a good level of fitness. If you were relatively unfit, there are some gnarly parts of it. So you would want to have a good moderate level of fitness.
Right.
And be prepared. You know, come with your water and your food and everything that you need. But yeah, that's been going really well. We've started a cultural tour called the Moa Hunter Tour. So Moa used to reside on Maunga Tautiri.
Okay.
We've actually found bones from Moa, which is a bit exciting. And we have a person on team called Bodhi Tihoi Taylor. Bodhi is mana whenua, is an amazing human, an absolutely amazing human. And he is descended from Moa hunters. And so he can name the last 13 generations of his whānau and be able to take people out into the forest and talk around how Māori warriors used the forest to create fire, water, what they did to actually navigate through, etc. So that's nothing, and I do mean nothing. Nothing is like going out into the forest, which is already amazing, and being beside Bodhi as he waiatas to the forest. Mm-hmm. And there's just I don't know, there's something deeply spiritual around
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so I bet
deeply.
There's goosebumps up your yeah. arms every time.
Yeah, yeah, it's mm-hmm. amazing. So there's a whole heap of things that we're doing in the tourism space. We're also, we've got an Airbnb, you can come and stay the night, and what I love about our Airbnb is you can just walk out the door and go and get your barista-made coffee in the morning, so that can't be, I think, gets better than that in my world. And, yeah, and we've just launched memberships. And, you know, for a family of five, and a monthly membership is less than, I think it's less than $20 a month, mm-hmm. and you get free access, you get a discount on your coffee. It's always about coffee for mm-hmm. me. Discount on the coffee and discount on tours, and you can bring friends and family and discount them in as well. So those are the sorts of things we're doing to try and generate revenue.
Yeah.
And then the last thing we're doing, which isn't necessarily tourism-based, but it is world-leading, is we are the first in the country to launch nature credits. And so for those of you that know anything about carbon and carbon credits, mm-hmm. This is similar but not similar. So carbon essentially is there to either offset an organisation or an individual's carbon footprint, what they've emitted in a yep. year. Underneath kind of carbon procurement, there's sustainability practices. So most organisations only want to buy the carbon they need to buy, and a lot of organisations in New Zealand are on sustainability journeys at the mm-hmm. moment where they're trying to reduce their overall footprint, get to a point that they can't reduce it anymore, and then they'll procure the carbon that they need, knowing that they've done everything they can to reduce.
Mm-hmm.
Nature credits are about restoring nature's footprint. So it's not about what you emit, it's about actually just doing good for nature.
Mm.
And every year we go through our work program, we take all of the cost of operations, we divide that into the 3,363 hectares, and then we cut it down even further into 100 square metre blocks. And we go out and sell, and we're monetizing the cost of the labor and the operational overhead to run the sanctuary. So for $12 a unit, you get to be part of the largest translocation of Kiwi in New Zealand's mm-hmm. history and all of the incredible things we do out there. So that's been world leading. We're the only conservation project, we're the only project in the country that are listed on an international trading platform, which is called Climate Trade. And we've just recently sold a whole bunch of units to a Polish accommodation company who have bought New Zealand nature. So it's been world leading and really, really exciting to be part of that journey with the company called Ecos, who are the brains behind it all. So
It's just amazing what people are coming up with these days, isn't it?
You've got to look at it all sorts of different ways.
Yeah.
It's, you know, trying to rely on traditional funding pathways. I call it the Oliver operating model, which is please, sir, can I have some more? Please, sir, can I have some more? And it's a really, really unsustainable way to lead an intergenerational business. You know, we are here for the next 1,000+ years and our funders fund us in rounds of typically, if we're lucky, we might get 3 years with funding, but typically 1 year is pretty normal. So when you're leading a business that needs to be here in 1,000 years, you can't take a 1 year approach to funding. So that's a lot of what we're developing, is how do we self-sustain, how do we fund ourselves, and we need the community to help us with that. And that is come out. It is buy coffee. It is come and do a tour. Join, be a member. You know, for less than a gym membership, you get to bring yourself and your kids out and really come and experience nature. You won't experience anything like Sanctuary Mountain Maungatauturi on the mainland of New Zealand.
Right. Well, that's very timely, since we were talking off air about my co-workers at Community Waikato. We're already booked in to come out sometime in July as part of our wellbeing strategy. And I'm not sure if it's we're going to be doing the session with Bodhi. I think it might be. But just to be out in nature, and it's well researched around the benefits to your well-being, isn't it? You know, it's the physical aspect, it's the mental aspect of it.
Yeah.
I know I was away over at Whangamata last weekend, and just being able to walk down around the beach, you know, it doesn't matter if it was a nice day or a wet day, just does something for your spirit, doesn't it?
It really does.
And you get that every day you're out there.
Lucky me.
Yeah, lucky you. Look, some amazing messaging that you've shared with us so far, and I think one in particular is around the diversity of your funding. We can't just rely on putting your hand out, as you say.
The Oliver
approach or whatever it might be. And just the ideas that you've come up with, congratulations, well done. Whether it's with other people helping you, you've still had to sort of lead the way with that. So I suppose for our community is as you say, what can we do? It's whether it's joining up as a membership or coming out. So if someone wants to come out, is it open 7 days a week? How do we work
that? We are 7 days a week, 364 days a year. We're open between 9 to 4:30 or 4 as a standard, mm-hmm. but we do night tours, which is really fun because you get to come out and see glowworms, and you get to come out and see spiders and insects, mm-hmm. but you also get to hear kiwi call. Mm. And we're just starting to get into kiwi tourism in a more meaningful way. So that's something that will be coming over the next few months. I think the big thing is for me is, once you come out, I defy anybody not to be addicted to it. It's mm-hmm. It is that special.
Yeah.
It is the only place I can say that I've been in New Zealand where you can walk into a forest block and feel a pulse. You can feel the mm-hmm. heartbeat of the forest. And Māori talk about it being transactional. You give to the maunga gives back to you. Mm-hmm. And so we need people to come out and give to Maunga Taitiri, to come and experience it, to fall in love with it. The money that they invest goes straight towards running the sanctuary, but it also goes to some of the work programs that we have at the moment around vulnerable people and the carer network particularly that sits around them. So we are working with the likes of Pinnacle Health. We've had hospice out, St. John Ambulance. We offer all of this for free, and they come and into the forest and help heal. So it's the carer network that sits around those that are in vulnerability, because the carer network worked damn hard. I was out at Waikaria Prison this week talking around how we could connect better there and do more. So as much as we are conservation, I do talk about this being an ecosystem, is that, you know, for people coming to visit, they invest money to come into the sanctuary, and that money goes to keeping the sanctuary going, but it also comes to improving the outcomes for those that are really sitting in vulnerability within our community. So it's a beautiful little ecosystem that we're
creating. It is. You know, it's the whole holistic approach, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
That's awesome. So there's lots of different things that you can experience. So you've talked about, you know, maybe, doing that tour with Bodhi, where you get to really understand the whole history.
Yeah.
And fantastic having someone who whakapapa's, you know, back to, you know, those that were there right at the outset.
Yeah.
So for schools, if there's any schools that haven't yet been, it's like is it an educational sort of tour that they have?
Yeah. So it's $11 a student, which is super, super, super cheap. Mm-hmm. But it's been able to say, actually, we're invested in creating future kaitiaki. And unless we get the kids in, they'll never appreciate what predator-free at scale delivers. You know, the predator-free 2050 program might take 2 or 3 predators an area away. We're removing 14 of them. So this is, you know, this is conservation at scale, and it will give the kids an opportunity to take that and to hold that in their hearts throughout their life, to understand they've got the capacity to make this change and shift in New Zealand's natives. It's a beautiful program. We've got a wonderful lead educator, Phil, who takes the team through, and we've got a whole bunch of people that work alongside him to make the magic happen. So great education program, and we do a whole bunch of other tours as well. We've got wetland area with Tuatara and Takahe, so you can come and do a wetland tour, and then we've got some, we call them quicker tours, 40 minutes that you can come in and do, get a sense of the forest and some of the history of the project.
Right. And so if I was just coming out either myself or just bringing my family out on, let's say, a Saturday or a Sunday, can you just walk around yourselves?
Yes.
Yep. So you can your own self-tour as such?
Yeah, we call it self-guiding.
Yep.
And look, before I started at Maunga Taitiri, I have actually done both. I've self-guided and I've gone on a guided tour. The guided tour, what I'd say is you just get a way better appreciation for what you're seeing. When I self-guided, I kind of wandered around not really certain what I was looking at. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I work there, I know what I was looking at.
And I think I know what that tree is, or I think I know what the animal is.
Yeah, and so when you come on a guided tour, you're then able, after the tour, to come and walk around. You don't have to leave the moment the tour's done, so you've got free access to go and just... run around.
Right, okay. And I know we've talked about the barista coffee. Is there any other refreshments available? Or
We would like to develop a cafe there. Where we're at the moment is, we've got ice creams and biscuits and chips and those sorts of things. Mother Earth has been a wonderful sponsor for us, so we've got some Mother Earth products there as well. That's at the moment. Down the track, we'd like to move more towards your scones, your muffins, your toasted sandwiches, that sort of thing. So we're just investigating how we get there at the moment. But I think the biggest problem we've had on the food space is we need a consistency of flow of people.
Yeah.
And that's where the community can come and help.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds like a real sort of put it out there challenge to everyone, I reckon, in the community. So what about can we bring our own picnic? And is there areas where they can sit down and sort of have a little picnic?
So you can definitely come and sit in the visitor centre with your own kai, and that's completely fine. We do ask if you're bringing food into the sanctuary, obviously no footprint, and please don't feed any of the birds, please. Because we're not a zoo. We need the wild birds to be wild. And our kākā, they're pretty cheeky, so they're on the hunt constantly for anything, any nibble they can find.
Okay, there's some really good messaging out there. I'm just going back to the whole history of when it was first developed, sort of the foresight that the founders must have had.
I call them mavericks, because it takes a maverick mindset to deliver what has been done. It takes the community, and we've got some incredible landowners that have allowed us to put fence lines through their property in order to create this eco sanctuary. They had every opportunity at the time to say no, and I'm not sure, maybe maverick mindset meant that they just got it installed, but without the landowners that surround, without the farming community that support us around, we would not be able to deliver what we deliver. So we're incredibly grateful to that community.
The tonga that's there, and as you say, it's, intergenerational, and, the hope is that, in hundreds of years' time, it will still be there. The mountain itself will be. The numbers that you've been talking about, actually, the number of Kiwi, up over 4,000 now. The whole scale. That's just incredible.
It is.
Fantastic challenge for you, I suppose, when you first came in, and it was like, wow. Dream job.
Dream job. But walked into a business that was going backwards by about $50,000 a month and didn't know. And being masked by that Oliver approach, right? Yeah. So funding would land, but it would be absorbed really quickly, and more funding needed. So the last 2.5 years, almost 3 years for me, have been spent trying to transition the business increasingly away from the need for grant funding. That's the goal. It just takes time. We've seen a 16% increase in numbers in the visitor space this year. That's phenomenal, and that's thanks to, my incredible marketing human called Rebecca. Her and the visitor services team do an incredible job to make sure that we are growing and growing. The goal is to get to a point that we're about 300 people a day, so that's 109,200 people annually. By way of comparison, Zealandia down in Wellington do more than that, so it's a reasonable number. It means that we don't overlove the forest is one of our big things.
Yeah, it's sort of getting that balance, isn't it?
Getting that balance. Deliver 109,200 people annually, and we would be self-funding. The revenue that we would get from that would solve us. So lots of different revenue streams means that collectively they grow and grow, and we get to a point that we're not relying on grant funding. That's my aspiration.
Right. We've got to have those aspirations, don't we? So for our community out there, it's either looking at coming along and buying a membership or just coming along and using, casually coming along and experiencing.
And look, perhaps the other thing that I should mention, we have an incredible army of around 200 volunteers. So
I was actually just thinking that, when you think about, the scale of the organisation, yes, you've got staff, but, there must be amazing volunteers out there.
I mean, it was founded by volunteers.
Yeah.
And back in the building day, there was about 70,000 hours a year put into Mangatauturi, which from a full-time person is about 33 people. So that's significant. Our volunteers now, we do about 15,000 hours a year of volunteers, but we're on the hunt for more all the time. And the volunteers, you could be sitting in the visitor centre serving somebody. You might be out doing trapping lines or monitoring lines. But if there are people out there that want to volunteer that have skill in social media or finances or whatever it is, I think quite often, you know, the sense is, oh, you've got to be boots on ground.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, we need people that can go and stand at a market day and sell our membership program. You know, those are the sorts of things we're looking for. So not just actually coming to the sanctuary, it can be a whole bunch of professional skill that you can bring in as well. So if you're interested in volunteering, just jump onto the website and you can follow the path and journey and connect with our rather wonderful volunteer coordinator who is called Jenny.
So. Right, okay. And so for those that are listening, the website address, am I going to put you on the spot there?
www.sanctuarymountain.co.nz.
Right. Well done. Just checked that up myself, so that's all good. So for any listeners out there, jump onto that website. I've had a look through myself, and it's a wealth of information on there. There's a video there, just lots of great pictures showing you the experience that you're going to have when you do come out there. And that's whether you're actually wanting to look at come out and taking one of the guided tours or your self-guided tour, or as you've just talked about, if you'd love to come on board as a volunteer. What about if I want to donate some money, or, you know, how do I go about that?
So there's, again, you can jump onto the website to donate and you can follow that through. The other thing that we started about, gosh, two years ago now, is that we're working alongside Momentum Waikato and they have set up an endowment policy for us called the Mangatauturi Nest Egg Fund.
Yes.
And that is something that that's one of my passions. What I'm trying to deliver in my tenure is intergenerational bedrock of financial well-being, and the endowment policy is critical to that. So that right now is only a baby, but we would love to see that grow and grow over the coming years, either through bequests or donations. And you can jump onto Momentum Waikato's website and again follow the links there and connect with Janice and the team around if you've got want to bequest anything. You know, it will be intergenerational money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the bequests and sort of putting donations aside is getting more popular, and there's a lot more awareness out there. And so, yeah, do put that challenge out there to you all. Look, we've now run out of time. It's amazing. You know, I'm sure I can sense the passion there, Helen. We could probably talk for another 27, 28 minutes and we'd have more to talk about. But thank you very much for coming into the studio and sharing with us all around Sanctuary Mountain, Mangatauturi. Thank you, Helen.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.